This episode is brought to you by Wrestling Resurgence. Use the promo code BROKEN15 to get 15% off Wrestling Resurgence merchandise and tickets for their upcoming shows. Links are in the description.
Yo, what's going on? It's your boy, Big Wavy Roy Johnson here.
Hello everyone, this is the Interview Queen, Alicia Too.
This is the infamous Cameron Solis.
This is the professional Nathan Cruz.
This is Veggie.
This is the Callahan Death Machine in the draw, and the face of Impact Wrestling, Sammy Callahan.
The one and only shot for the Thunder, Willie Mack.
This is Shreddy Brick, a.k.a. Mr. Clangin' and Bangin'.
And you're listening to...
You are listening to...
Broken But Glorious.
Broken But Glorious.
Broken But Glorious. Yeah.
Hello and welcome to Broken But Glorious. I'm Chris Slappin and welcome to our top 10 wrestlers of the 2010s. For this countdown, I'm delighted to be joined by the 11th best wrestler of the decade, Nick Davey.
The 11th? OJMO must be 12. Well, good evening.
And three-time wrestling author, Oliver Newman.
Good evening, everyone.
How are you doing, lads?
Yeah, doing all right, thanks. How are you, Chris?
Very well, thank you.
Yeah. Do you have a good New Year, Christmas and all that?
Yeah, can't complain. It was good.
Yeah, it was fantastic. I ate a lot, drank a lot. Trying to get back into a bit of shape. So, yeah, starting obviously working out a bit more, trying to eat a bit healthier, and I'm hating every second of it.
I'm pretty happy I only put on 2 pounds, so I'm still under the 16 stone, which I was happy about.
Well, I'm doing dry. I'm not doing dry January as such. One, because I had a few beers on New Year's Day, but I'm doing dry to Scotland because I'm going to Scotland on the last weekend of the month. So I'm calling it dry to Scotland. So DTS.
Brilliant. Yeah, I got back on the salads today and working. Oh, it was fun.
Yeah,
it's a salmon salad.
Oh, nice. If you put a bit of green pepper, a bit of onion, and it's really not that bad. I had a chicken one on Monday, and
It was lovely. It was a tangy salmon and pepper, I think.
Ooh, lovely
salad. It was good. Yeah, it's lovely.
Sounds good.
It was good. Yeah. So hopefully that will get me back on the road to 12 stone, as the doctor wants me to be 12 stone. Well, I'm never going to be 12 stone.
I believe in you.
I don't think I've been 12 stone since about 14. But anyway,
how many times do I have to tell you dad bods are the fashion?
I don't think this is the fashion. I think slightly overweight may be the fashion, but not how I am at the moment. So, but I'm a stone lighter than I was in September, so I'm happy with that. So in our top 10, this is how we came up with our top 10. So I asked all the regular hosts on the BBG Wrestling Network to submit a top 10. I then gave 10 points to their number 1, 9 to their number 2, down to 1 for the 10th pick, which gave a total score. Males, females and teams could be included in the top 10. In total, 37 wrestlers were picked. So that shows what a vast variety of taste we have on the BBG Network.
I'm not going to lie and say I didn't do mine after about 10 pints, but yeah, I think I would be lying if I said that wasn't the case.
I think your top 10 is the closest to the actual top 10, so. But not one wrestler was picked by all of us. So.
Oh, that's cool.
I am Miles Cameron, and if you want to be miles better, listen to the Broken But Glorious podcast now.
So, should we start our top 10? So, at number 10 is Shinsuke Nakamura.
Sorry.
I miss your singing.
Well, we've got nine more picks to go, guys, so sorry.
Yeah, if you do a song for each one, that'd be fun. Yeah. All right, so following his 3 NWGP heavyweight NWPG heavyweight championships in the 2000s, Nakamura would then elevate the Intercontinental Championship to a main event status. He held the title 5 times between 2012 and 2016, and the title received top billing over the heavyweight championship at New Japan's biggest show, Wrestle Kingdom 8. Tokyo Sports wrote that the Intercontinental Championship and the Heavyweight Championship were now equals, and even Dave Meltzer wrote that Nakamura versus Tanahashi made the Intercontinental Championship feel like a real world championship belt. Nakamura's association with the championship continued till 2016, when he successfully defended it against former heavyweight champion AJ Styles at Wrestle Kingdom. And then in 2016, he was stripped of the title when he departed and signed to WWE, where he won the NXT and US title twice and the 2018 Royal Rumble, and as of recording, is the current Intercontinental Champion.
Wow. Yowie wowie. Well, I think with Nakamura, I've got a sort of a soft spot for him because he obviously did win one of my favourite Royal Rumbles of the decade, because it was the Royal Rumble leading into WrestleMania 34, and I happened to actually go to that one. Obviously, I won't be around the bush. I obviously didn't know too much of Nakamura before he joined WWE. That was me, my young, inexperienced self of not watching too much indie wrestling. But since, obviously, he's joined WWE, he's started off fantastic with that match against Sami Zayn on NXT TakeOver. Dallas. Sorry, I beg your pardon. A fantastic match. Probably one of my favourite matches of the year. Certainly one of my favourite TakeOver matches of that year. I think it was 2016. I think that was the year when the TakeOvers really started to obviously just capture new audiences like myself, just capture a whole lot of crowds, and they were starting where they started really basically terrorizing WWE to part where they were winning match of the year.
Yeah, they found the formula for takeovers that year. Five excellent matches. That's all you need. You don't need to put squashes on or have just exhibition matches. Just have five excellent matches. That's all you need.
Exactly. They had my favorite tag team match of all time. I think DIY match against the Revival. But no, Nakamura, as I say, he was fantastic on NXT. Obviously, when he came to WWE, obviously, I know he's had so many ups and downs. Personally, I really did enjoy the sort of after WrestleMania feud with Styles when he did turn heel. I didn't sort of enjoy his "sorry, don't speak English" sort of promos. I thought they were fantastic. But we've seen him having some classics as well. Still, Seth Rollins at Survivor Series last year, I thought was excellent. And I think he's obviously got his humor. I know he's had a lot of criticism that people are sort of saying he's using WWE as a kind of holiday, so to speak, which I completely disagree with. I just think, obviously, it takes a while for superstars to get going in any promotion sort of thing. But I'm really enjoying him now with Sami Zayn and Cesaro. And I'm just praying that it may lead to a WrestleMania match between Zayn and Nakamura, so we do get the rematch from the TakeOver Dallas a few years ago.
That'd be good. Yeah, definitely.
Worthy 10th spot.
Yeah, and for myself, I watched the aforementioned match that Chris was talking about, Styles versus Nakamura, when I signed back up to New Japan World before Wrestle Kingdom 12, like a couple of years ago. So saw what he could do in a New Japan ring and was excited when he moved to WWE in 2016. The aforementioned match against Sami Zayn was fantastic. He's just kind of built, going up and up, and obviously won the Royal Rumble. And we expected him to win the WWE title at the WrestleMania Nick went to. That wasn't the case. And he kind of been treading water at that moment in time. And then he seems to have got a new lease of life with this new Intercontinental title reign that he's currently in. So, that would be great to see Zayn versus Nakamura at WrestleMania. Not sure how that will happen based on, both guys being heels and stuff, but it'd be nice to see it happen. Just something for him to do that's worthwhile at WrestleMania would be good.
Yeah, definitely. All right, so then at number 9, we have Akisha Okada. I think I said that right. Akisha. It's Akisha. I can never say his first name. Okada.
Akisha. Kashuka Okada.
Kashuka Okada.
Yeah, that's what I think it is based on the reviews I've done over the years.
All right, so Okada started his 2010s on his developmental tour of TNA, and despite the TNA tour being thought of as a disaster, Okada came back to New Japan Well, he said when he came back to New Japan, he knew what he needed to do to become one of the top wrestlers in the world. And so he returned to New Japan in 2012. He transformed himself into the villainous Rainmaker. Since then, he's won the IWPG Heavyweight Championship 5 times. He's holding the record for most combined days as champion. He's won the G1 Climax 2x, headlined Wrestle Kingdom 5 times, and he's only 32. So I get my prediction, if we do this again in 10 years, he'll be a lot higher on this list. So in 2017, Okada became the first Japanese wrestler to come top of the PWI 500. Yeah, and he's been responsible. He was the guy responsible for several matches breaking the Dave Meltzer star rating scale. I don't know what else to say about him. He's just had an excellent couple of years, and I'm gonna say he's only 32. So I'm so looking forward to see where just what he does now. He's in the prime of his career. What's considering what he's done so far?
I think with regards to Okada, the reason why he's probably not higher in this list is because we only tend to watch the absolute best Japanese wrestling as opposed to every Japanese wrestling event.
Yeah.
I think he's at his best when he wrestles another wrestler's style. So matches that I've seen that I've really enjoyed. Zack Sabre Jr. at the New Japan, New Japan Cup in 2018 at Sakura Genesis. That was a really good match. And then obviously the Kenny Omega series, where the best match was the 2 out of 3 falls match that Kenny Omega won and won the IWGP title for the first time. Yeah. So I think he's at his best when he's going against those kind of opponents. Even with the titles he's won and stuff, I think there is better wrestlers than Okada. I think he's been given a lot. And is good to like really good, but anything above that, I don't think he is, to be honest. If you go back to Wrestle Kingdom this past weekend, he shouldn't have been beating Ibushi, because Ibushi is one of the best wrestlers in the world, and considering he won like the G1 Climax and stuff, for him not to go on and win the IWGP title was probably a mistake that New Japan will probably feel.
I think they had to get Naito to win it this time, though, because he's getting on.
Yeah, I can understand that, because obviously then to like win the 2 titles, what would that have done for Ibushi? But for Ibushi to lose both matches at Wrestle Kingdom, what's that do for him as opposed to Naito? But you know, from a story arc perspective, people said like 8 years worth of story and stuff. But for me, Okada is good when he's with the right opponents. He's fantastic. But I don't think he's as great as everyone says.
All right, then at number 8.
I was going to quickly say something about Okada. Sorry, Chris. When you mentioned all those accolades that he's already achieved in his career, at 32, it's scary, isn't it, really, of how much success this young man's had. And, it'll be interesting when we do the review in 10 years' time where he'll be there. Obviously, he'll be 42 then. You'd like to think he would have obviously conquered a little bit more. But I mean, for the decade, I mean, you have to talk about, when you talk about matches of the decade, I'm not obviously a big New Japan pro wrestling watcher, but that match against Kenny Omega, I think will be match of the decade by quite a while. I think, I'd say, just hearing people who don't even into wrestling and people who can't see me sort of said, oh my God, have you heard about this Okada versus Kenny Omega match sort of thing? You have to go and watch it. And just the reaction it got alone was fantastic, but the match itself, just if you don't like wrestling, if you love wrestling, you didn't really enjoy that match, then I think you have to question why you do enjoy watching wrestling, sort of thing, because it was that good, sort of thing. And that's,
you're talking about the 2 out of 3 falls match, Nick.
Sorry,
are you talking about the 2 out of 3 falls match?
Or talk about the one from 2017 New Wrestle Kingdom?
Okay. Yeah,
sure. That's another worthy place in the top 10.
Yes, and at number 8, it's our one and only female wrestler. So I feel that no other competitor has brought more validation to the women's revolution than Charlotte Flair. I firstly want to say... firstly, I want to say congratulations on her recent engagement to Andrade. So I'm sure she won't listen to this, but congratulations.
So. Rick, I think Rick Rick will pass it on for us.
All right, so debuting in NXT in 2013, it wouldn't be long before she reigned supreme as the women's title holder, holding it for nearly a year, 2014 and 15. And she famously moved to the main roster with Sasha Banks and Becky Lynch as part of the women's revolution. And she's been unstoppable ever since with her title reigns. Flair's a 10-time women's title champion. She's had memorable feuds with Banks, Lynch, Bayley, plus others.
Culminating.
With her appearance alongside Lynch and Ronda Rousey in the first ever women's WrestleMania main event. But yeah.
Yep. See, Nick, yeah. Nick's here for the singing. I'm here for the correcting.
Yeah, a culminating. I can say that now. I'm going to say it like something. Okay.
The only thing I say about this is I don't think she should have been the only woman on this list, as I put together five males and five females on mine. But yeah, obviously she's done so much for women's wrestling. I'd love to see Charlotte in the kind of situation Tessa Blanchard's in at the moment, obviously going up against friends of the show, Sami Callihan, almost called him the other name then. Going into Hard to Kill this Sunday, it would be really interesting to see Charlotte in like a you know, it's called intergender, but just in a pro wrestling kind of way, male against female. I think it'd be really interesting to see how she would get on with that.
Well, but if they ever did a Cruiserweight Classic again, she would be great to be in that.
Well, yeah, you've said that in the past, haven't you? So. Yeah, it would be interesting just to see that. But in terms of what she's done for women's wrestling, she's, you know, probably the best female athlete there's ever been. You know, in terms of the women's wrestling evolution, the Hell in a Cell match against Sasha Banks was the first ever women's match to main event the pay-per-view at Hell in a Cell 2016. The feud they had, obviously... You know, they didn't want it to go that way with Becky Lynch. You know, she didn't want the WWE didn't want her to be Charlotte to be heel and Becky to be face in that situation. But that happened because of obviously them two working together, and that was a brilliant feud as well. So yeah, well, everything that she could possibly do for women's wrestling, she's done. So it's kind of in the same position as Okada, as in won the main title for, you know, for her gender at this moment in time. Kind of where does she go from here? So, you know, is she going to be a 11-time, 12-time? Is she going to beat a dad's record? Or is there something they can do to shake things up? Because, you know, it probably never happened, but... yeah, intergender wrestling would be quite cool because seeing how she got along in that kind of circumstance, really. But yeah, definitely worthy of being on the list. Just probably shouldn't have been the only female for me.
I think you've a lot of stuff I agree with there. And I think in particular that feud with Sasha Banks was absolutely fantastic. And I think as well, when obviously the women were coming up to WWE, when they were trying to turn it into a women's revolution, I think with this feud as well, it was the first feud that actually got everyone believing. Because it's all well and good, obviously, Stephanie McMahon coming out week after week telling us there's a woman evolution happening, blah-de-blah-de-blah, basically ramming it down our throats. I think this feud, it let the ladies actually do the talking and the wrestling doing the talking with the feud itself. It obviously got everyone involved. It got everyone engaged. And I think there was general excitement about the feud. And I think the storyline telling as well for this was fantastic. I love the way that obviously with Charlotte Flair's pay-per-view record that year, that during that feud, that Sasha can only kind of win on Raw. She can't win on the big stage with the pay-per-views. I thought all the little storyline telling in this whole feud was just fantastic. And I'd say, yeah, out of all of the the women's feuds that we have seen over the decade. This was by far my favourite one in 2016. I think that was actually probably the highlight of Raw at the time as well. I think it was when they did that draft. Whilst the draft was fantastic at the time, I think the only real major things to keep you watching were the Sasha and Charlotte feud, and obviously that they're a certain someone's list as well at the time, but I think were the only real two must-see things on Raw at that present sort of stage. That feud was fantastic, and as you say, main events in WrestleMania, it's in my opinion, I've said it countless of times on the show before, in my opinion, it's mission accomplished with the women's evolution. They're completely on par with the men now. It's the norm when you see women's closing up Raw, closing up SmackDown, even closing up pay-per-view. You don't think, oh, hang on, this is a bit odd. They're closing up with the women. You just think of it as the complete norm, and it's just absolute second nature now, and rightfully so. And
The Kabuki Warriors versus Becky and Charlotte as the main events. There wasn't a big deal about it.
No, I thought fair enough. I think it was fair enough. I think it was probably one of the hottest rivalries going into the actual pay-per-view. I know you could say TLC is one of those pay-per-views that not WWE don't care about. I mean, I always class it as the, kind of, funny enough, as it is around that time, the Christmas mode pay-per-view. You know, like when you're in office and people go, oh, only a couple of weeks till left of Christmas. So people tend to wind down. I do find that pay-per-view as the wind-down pay-per-view, but that's not taking anything away at all from the women and the match itself. But if that's the case, though, Nick,
the three women, Becky, Bayley, and Shayna Baszler, main event in Survivor Series, and that's one of the big four?
No, I think Survivor Series, absolutely. If I mean post-Survivor Series, I think when we hit sort of December months, I think that's when it sort of starts to go into a bit of a shutdown before they recharge the batteries and go big, obviously, heading into the Rumble and the Mania season sort of thing. But as I say, with Charlotte, when we talk about all these fantastic achievements that the women wrestlers have done in the latter part of the decade, any name that comes to mind the credit has to go to Charlotte. And as well, I think as well, with having her father as Ric Flair, there was obviously a lot of pressure on her as well to succeed. I mean, if you've got someone that big coming here, obviously as a relative in the wrestling industry, there's obviously going to be ginormous pressure, isn't there? I mean, Ric Flair's still probably one of the biggest names to date in wrestling, bar a few, maybe like Hogan and Rock and Stone Cold. Flair's still absolutely huge. And as I say, if you've got a family member coming in, there must be that little bit of pressure. I'm not trying to say it's like sort of like almost like when a footballer comes onto the scene of, say, yeah, I don't know, say it's David Beckham's son, and there's a lot of pressure saying, oh, well, he must be as good as his father. In wrestling, it must still be the same sort of thing. And I know I think she's done so well in that regard as well. But absolutely completely worthy of eight. And so the only disappointment you could argue is there's not another woman on the list, and potentially Charlotte could even be a little bit higher.
Have you seen who Brooklyn Beckham's girlfriend is?
No.
He's seeing a Victoria Beckham lookalike.
Oh, for God's sake. Why doesn't that surprise me? Sorry, that was the first footballer that did spring to mind. I do apologise to Glenn Murray for listening.
All right, so do you want to know what our top five women would have been if we did a separate list?
Yeah, go, that'd be interesting.
Yeah, sure, why not?
So at number five, we had Becky Lynch.
Number one, did you say?
Number five.
I was going to say, I wonder how that's happened.
Number four would have been Shayna Baszler. Number three was Sasha Banks.
Mm-hmm.
Two was Asuka, and then obviously Charlotte, number one.
Yeah. Fair enough, mate. Becky could have been a little bit higher, I think that's fair enough.
Right, so number seven was Kevin Owens, who I've not seen on many other people's best of the decade lists.
Fight, Owens, fight!
Obviously, Owens hasn't been in WWE the entire decade. The success of Kevin in, like, Ring of Honor, where he held the title for like over a year, and his two reigns, the PWG title, helped showcase how wrestlers could succeed outside WWE with a grown fan base. And there was him as Kevin Steen, which kind of helped that indie boom in like the mid 2010s. And that was probably one of the major reasons why we've put him on this list, was his part of that indie boom in the early 2010s, and then when he signed with the WWE, he proved he was good enough to be in the big league, and he thrived, made a huge impact by turning on Sami Zayn winning the NXT Championship and then answering the John Cena's US Open Challenge whilst NXT Champion, and then series of matches, which are all brilliant. Then Owens won the... I did win. He was given the Universal title, wasn't he?
Yep.
Handed it by Triple H. Yeah.
And then his teaming with
Jericho. He did technically win a match, but yeah.
Then his teaming with Jericho led to some of the most memorable moments of the whole decade. And I love his current run as like the modern day Stone Cold. I'm loving it at the moment. So.
I absolutely love KO. Obviously, again, not sound like a broken record. Can't really comment too much on his pre-NXT days. But yeah, his rival at NXT was straight away fantastic, great bit of storylines heading from the off with the turn on Sami Zayn, absolutely excellent. And I would say out of every single NXT call up, I think this is by far been the best one. I think debuting on the main roster that on John Cena. I know obviously you could argue the angle was all there from the off, and it was all easier for him to go in and make an impact. But I thought it was just absolutely fantastic. I thought his whole personality when he came down, it was just brilliant. His whole feud with John Cena as a whole, I thought was absolutely excellent. I love the one where I think Cena beat him to make it 1-0 in the, so to speak, in the series. Mm-hmm. I think it was Money in the Bank. And then after, I loved the little moments, like he looked like he wanted to cry, wanted to hug him, and then he just sort of gave him a pop-up powerbomb. I thought that was that was excellent. And I think as well, that wasn't a very good time in WWE as well, 2015. And I thought this feud was just absolutely superb, really kept audiences like myself from sort of fading away, so he deserves a lot of credit. And then, as you say, since then he's regardless of whatever program you get given, he makes it interesting, in my opinion. As you say, the stuff with Jericho was incredible. In my opinion, the best Raw segment of the decade was the Festival of Friendship. I thought that fantastic. Pretty argue, you could even argue one of the best segments of all time, but I guess that's for another podcast. But I thought that was just brilliant. The whole segment, as I mentioned earlier, 2016, it was him and Jericho and obviously the Sasha Banks Charlotte feud, which was the best part about Raw in that year. But even so, his feud with Dean Ambrose, I thought was excellent. That's TLC. I think it was the last man standing there at the Royal Rumble 2016. It was great. I've really enjoyed his. I did enjoy his both rivalries with Shane McMahon. I think Owens deserves more credit than the former there. And even his little feud with Strowman, whilst it was a bit of a mess, I thought even Owens made it quite entertaining, to be fair. So even when he gets given the rubbish he has to put up with, he still makes it interesting. So I think that says it all about the competitor. But no, love KO. I really think he's in for, I really hope he's in for a fantastic year. And I really want him to win the Royal Rumble. He's my pick to win the Rumble. So I don't know what the odds are. I don't want to hear what the odds are. he's the boy I'm backing. I really want KO to win it. I really want him to have a fantastic year. And I'm just so excited to see where it takes him. And it could even be, I think with KO as well, he's one of these sort of wrestlers I class as, they've got a bit of leverage over WWE. He's not going to get the credit he deserves in WWE. There's a lovely new promotion called AEW, which I think he could obviously thrive in as well. So KO is in a, I think he's one of the biggest hot properties, I think, in the whole of wrestling at the moment. So some strong praise from me.
Yeah, and for myself, with regards to Kevin Owens, obviously seen bits and pieces of what he did in Ring of Honor to kind of start the decade and into like the first few years. When he was like campaigning outside of the Manhattan Center and stuff, and I've obviously had a soft spot for him since I saw him like kind of jawing with the crowd and his own tag team partner El Generico back in 2008 for me. But to bring it forward to like modern day, the matches that Nick was talking about with John Cena, I love the way he came in as NXT champion and kind of stood on the US title, saying that the NXT title was better than that. That kind of showed his charisma and who what he was about. And then his actual debut match was at Elimination Chamber, 31st of May 2015. And that was on my birthday. So that's a really cool moment. watching him beat John Cena, because obviously we wanted NXT guys to do really well. And I agree with Nick, probably the best call up to the main roster. The Festival of Friendship in 2017, after kind of being pals with Chris Jericho and everything, and then you know, he's on the list himself, and it was a really, really cool moment. And yeah, kind of, and then obviously to like modern day, he's the Stone Cold Steve Austin to Seth Rollins' Bret Hart. Mm-hmm. You know, so hopefully they can produce the same kind of matches that the two guys I've compared them to have done. So it's a difficult one, obviously being on the list and being in eighth place and stuff. Is there you know, people that were probably in a better position than him that probably should have been on this list and weren't? But with everything that he's done, I completely agree with Nick. He's made it entertaining. He's you know, he's shown that he can wrestle with the best of them, and yeah, he's been pretty consistent for the decade. So that's probably the reason why he's you know, he's on this list, and other people aren't.
Has some excellent merch as well, I must say.
Yeah, definitely.
I've got one of his t-shirts that I loved wearing. I love wearing is the KO prize fight one I've got. But yeah. I'd have add that in as well, just for another little bonus.
Surprise you haven't got KO Mania.
I want every time he releases a shit, I want it. But yeah, only so much wrestling merch you can have, I guess.
All right, number six. So this is someone who only wrestled for 4 years of the decade. However, CM Punk is still one of the most influential wrestlers in modern day wrestling. So he started.
CM Punk.
Right, so the Straight Edge Society brought Punk into the decade, and then he became the leader of the New Nexus in late 2010. But it was the summer of Punk in 2011 that took him to stardom, and the pipe bomb on the stage in particular made him a phenomenon. I can't speak tonight.
Phenomenon. There we go.
And that WWE Championship win at Money in the Bank, which, and then him being champion for like 430 odd days between 2011 2013 just made Punk, like, if he had wrestled maybe two or three more years in this decade, I reckon he would have been higher on the list. But number six for CM Punk, so.
Absolutely. He's one of my favorite wrestlers. Just gutted that Brock Lesnar, even though he didn't defend it half the time, took his title reign away from him with the number of days and stuff, because Punk kind of defended it as much as he possibly could and had a fantastic reign.
Wasn't on average he defended it twice a week or something? No, red or something.
Oh, where?
Like that,
I didn't even know that. And then if you look at the end of the title reign, he lost it to The Rock, and then just wanted to be, you know, even if it was like a triple threat elimination match, he just wanted that WrestleMania main event. And that's kind of the reason why he left. But yeah, when he was the champion, he defended against all comers, and you know, obviously was with Paul Heyman and against Paul Heyman. Fantastic match against Brock Lesnar, The Undertaker. Yeah, that's the reason why Punk is on this so highly, is because of that title reign that lasted, you know, that long, and people have clamoured for him to be back, and now he's back on the backstage show, and people are hoping against hope that they see him again wrestling in 2020, especially with WrestleMania coming up.
I think the Straight Edge Society is underrated. I thought that was a fantastic angle.
I think that had more legs on it, though. So.
I really enjoyed it. I was watching, what did I watch the other day? I was going back and watching some WrestleManias. I thought I'd watch Royal Rumbles.
Yes,
I went back to watch Royal Rumble 2010, the one with Edge returned, just because I'd never actually seen that Rumble before, so I wanted to see what it
was. Oh, I watched that one the other day as well.
Yeah, just sort of flicking through, and I watched 2001 as well, but But then I did enjoy the start when Punk was sort of on the mic, sort of getting people to try and join his Straight Edge Society, how he can save them. I forgot how good the angle was, so maybe go back and watch a few YouTube clips. And again, I thought his promo work was excellent, suited him down to a T. I thought that was great. And even when he was on commentary, he was probably the best commentator there was as well. When he was on that. I love the
pipe bomb, wasn't it? When he said, "Even on commentary, I'm better than everyone else."
You're spot on, and I just loved even with the funny angles when he was like, "Oh man, he just dropped my diet soda on the floor." Well, that was great. And then just say the real when it really kicked off was 2011. The amount of times I've mentioned it on the show, people are probably bored to death of me saying it, but it is my thing. It's one of my favourite ever angles in wrestling. I'm just so gutted even to this day how excited it could have been, how great it could have been. It could have, I just think it could have changed the whole game of wrestling. It could have kept and got so many fans back or kept them to stay. I know a few fans disappeared after that because they had enough. But I don't want to focus on the negatives of how it turned into a Triple H Kevin Nash feud. I'd rather focus on the Punk himself, of just how good that promo was, how great the matches was. John Cena was, it's my favourite match of the decade in WWE by a fair shot. It was one of my favourite pay-per-views I've ever watched. It was just absolutely fantastic. And that is largely why he is on the list. I know you've said about 4 years, only wrestling 4 years of the decade, but 2011, that feud with Cena, and in fact, even in my opinion, the way he carried the whole company over 2012, it was a dire time. In my opinion, 2012, I thought Punk pretty much had the company on the back of his shoulders, how to keep it going. His matches with Daniel Bryan, the feud itself may have not been, wasn't that great in my opinion, what they had to work with, but the matches themselves, obviously these two leading to it basically, was great. And And even his sort of ugly sort of stuff, like the bit with Jerry the King Lawler involved in that, and again with the Undertaker, he was fantastic at that. I just think it was disappointing. I don't want to slag the way he lost it off too much, because The Rock is my favourite of all time, so I'm going to sort of just skip past that bit.
Should never have lost it to The Rock.
But then you could just see towards the end, he just looked like a broken man almost, the way he was coming out the ring. He looked shattered. And as I say, looking at it now, it's no surprise he left, but just absolutely gutted. But as you say, he's back on backstage, looks very happy, looks healthy. Just please, I hope he wrestles in 2020. And as I say, a return at the Rumble would absolutely... have me screaming. As I say, I will be watching it live this year, so really excited for it. And just say, every year I live in hope, but I think this year you may get me breaking down in tears that he's not going to be on there, or breaking down in tears that he is on there. So, fantastic wrestling, I'd say, largely on the list because of that 2011 stuff, but it's fantastic.
And then obviously, everyone's focus for CM Punk is the John Cena match at Money in the Bank 2011. Absolutely. When, you know, if you want a crowd that's completely against John Cena and boos him out of the building, that is the match to watch. And probably another reason why he's on the list so high, because of everything that kind of brought to the forefront in terms of emotions in a wrestling match. And, you know, as fans.
Question for you both.
Yeah.
Do you think if the wrestling wasn't that great, this is just like, say, 2020 ahead, the wrestling's not that great, Raw, SmackDown pay-per-views, but you get a crowd like Money in the Bank every week, do you think that would be better or worse? So say if the wrestling's pretty average, but you've got an absolute unbelievable audience every week, not saying they're idiots and they hijack the show by not showing the wrestlers respect, but they do generally get behind their superstars, but the match quality is not that great, but the atmosphere at every show's unbelievable. Would you think that'd be a better product?
Definitely.
Yeah,
if you watch a really good match, but the crowd's not into it, it kind of devalues the match.
Well, I think that's why indie wrestling, like, progress is so great, because, well, was so great when I used to go all the time, because largely it was the atmosphere was just incredible. The match quality, some matches may have not been that fantastic to watch, but I think it was made better by the atmosphere, if that makes sense. And they made it almost made the matches unmissable sort of thing. So, no, just a question I thought I'd ask.
If you can get a crowd emotionally invested in a wrestler, then the matches don't have to be that great.
No, I think you're spot on.
I think it's what me and Steve and Jackson are going through with the ROH review, is that we're seeing good matches, but the crowds are not reacting to it in the greatest way. So the match quality does suffer. So I think if the match quality is like good, but the fans are fantastic, then it will drive up how a match is perceived and what you think of a match. I definitely think fans can kind of make or break a match if the atmosphere isn't there. Like there was a Chris Jericho Eddie Guerrero match from back in the day where they were basically wrestling for themselves because the WWE fans were sitting on their hands. But it was still a great match.
Yeah.
Yeah, you remember that one. It was still a great match. It's just the fans just didn't react to it. So how much greater would it have been if the fans had have reacted to it? So I see where you're coming from, Nick. I think it is important to have fan support, but it's down to, you know, connecting with the characters and everything else. And then the match quality comes secondary to the fan support.
Hi, everyone. It's Oliver Newman here, three-time pro wrestling author. And for myself, if you want to support me and my work, you can buy my books, A Fan's Perspective, One Man's Exploration of British Wrestling, where I focus on the British wrestling scene. My book on WWE in 2016, A Fan's Perspective, 2016, What a Year to Be a Fan of WWE. And my book on WrestleMania 24, A Fan's Perspective, How My Lifelong Dream Became a Nightmare. You can buy them on Amazon in paperback and Kindle, Kindle Instantaneous and Kindle Unlimited for free. Or if you would like a signed copy, you can get in contact with me on Big Cartel, A Fan's Perspective. BigCartel.com. Thank you very much.
All right, now our number five is John Cena.
Doop, doop, doop,
doop. All right, so you could probably successfully argue that John Cena's best work came in the 2000s, and he shouldn't be on this list, but I think he should be. So I think he pretty much dominated the first couple of years of this decade, beating all the top tier superstars, capturing all the gold. He won multiple championships in the 2010s more than any other wrestler. At Royal Rumble 2017, he did the unthinkable, tying the legendary mark of 16 world titles with Ric Flair. He's had great feuds with Brock Lesnar, CM Punk, Randy Orton, AJ Styles, The Rock. So you could easily... it's easier to name people he hasn't faced over the last 10 years than people he has. And then, as an added bonus, he brought prestige back to the US title in 2015 with his open challenges. And I think he's still got a lot more to offer if he does return, if and when he does return. And do you think that he'll ever win a 17th title?
I think in terms of John Cena, the best work that he's done has been the open challenges and what that's done for other people. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we talked about Kevin Owens earlier. So I think this John Cena, who's kind of helping other people instead of helping himself, you know, with the title reigns that he's had and stuff, is the best John Cena that WWE can hope for and allow to kind of be a part of the product and stuff. In terms of whether he will, you know, get the 17th title reign, to go past Ric Flair's record. Not sure, because he seems to be, closing down in terms of his wrestling career with everything else he's got going on. He hasn't been on a pay-per-view in 2019.
No, I predicted that he'd win the title on the first SmackDown. That was my prediction for this year.
For 2020?
No, on last year, sorry. My prediction was the first episode of SmackDown on Fox and he'd win the championship, but then Brock Lesnar did it.
Yeah. So his career seems to be dwindling down. But yeah, as long as he comes back and still does what he does, obviously with the AJ Styles feud in 2016, he was fantastic. With the Kevin Owens feud in 2015, he was fantastic. And if he works with that kind of caliber of wrestler and brings them up to the next level, then that's the best John Cena the wrestling fans can hope for, really.
Yeah, I think with Cena, I think this has sort of been the decade where fans, especially towards the end of the decade, the fans' opinion of him's changed. I think it's got a lot more respectful. He actually gets genuine pops when he comes out now. I think the booing's more of the Kurt Angle type booing. It's banter. It's part of the gimmick, part of the crowd's reaction, getting the reaction out of the audience. I think the John Cena sucks chance obviously actually pop a big part of that. I think that's actually gotten him kind of over with the song.
I think it's part of the song. I think people sing Let's Go Cena sucks. They sing it as a song now. I think he's very fast. Like not back in the day where there was obvious, there was high pitched. Let's go see it, and then it was quite obviously all the men were going Cena sucks. All the children, Let's go see it. But just I think it's just part of the song. I think people sing both parts now.
Exactly. I think everyone just has a lot of respect for the bloke and what he's achieved. I think if you look at the start, he took WWE into the decade a bit like we said with Punk carrying the WWE. I think Cena as well. I don't forget, Cena carried WWE for large portions of the previous decade, and I think he did take the WWE into the new decade very well. I know he still had, because obviously, don't forget, he had, at the start of the decade, he had sort of Shawn Michaels, Triple H, Undertaker all on. Well, Shawn Michaels was pretty much done at the start of the decade, wasn't he? But they were all sort of narrowing down. Jericho wasn't around every week because he was off a while. Edge, again, another one coming to the end of his career. And again, there wasn't enough new stars, really. Punk wasn't actually at the start of the decade really onto that main caliber. It was obviously because of the 2011 feud where Punk went into the top tier of talent, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I think he deserves an awful lot of credit for that. In terms of getting sort of superstars over, I know there's obviously been a lot of criticism in the past. He doesn't put enough talent over. The one that springs to mind was the Nexus angle. That could have been absolutely fantastic. And again, whether it's down to Cena, I think it's a bit wrong to criticise the wrestler in hand. I think
he has come out since and said he's regretted it's still winning that match now.
Yeah, I think. And that's
the finish was changed on the day, wasn't it? Uh-huh. It was going to be Nexus, and then it was changed on the day.
Well, I didn't know that. Well, good bit of information, because I think that could have been a great feud. That's really wound me up at the time when that happened. I personally did absolutely love this feud with The Rock, mainly building up to WrestleMania 28 as opposed to 29. I thought build up to 28 was class, and it got a lot of, at the time I was at college at the time, and it got loads of people who sort of my age who haven't watched wrestling for years to come back and watch it. Everyone was watching it week in, week out, just to see what would happen next between the two. I think it was more the buzz of The Rock being back in WWE, in all honesty. Yeah. But Cena played his part massively. I think also, full credit to Cena. He actually had a lot of diehard fans cheering Cena towards the end of that, of the rivalry, going into 22, WrestleMania 28. But the match itself, I thought, was excellent as well. Really good main event. Had a passionate winner as well. I know it was in a hometown crowd of Miami, but I thought that was excellent. But even so, his little feuds here and then, I really loved the feud with, I know it was only a one-match feud, but with Mark Henry. I know Mark Henry deserves more of the credit for that, for the promo. But again, there's two of you in a feud. You have seen a played as part of that really well, I thought, as well. And even in the sort of in the feud with Seth Rollins as well, I thought was absolutely fantastic. Really helped Seth's career as well. I think that was the feud where I think with the Seth, especially that triple threat match with Brock as well. That was fantastic. Yeah. One of my favorite Rumble matches. I think that actually got people believing that Seth is a main eventer. I think that was the match where people trusted it. And who knows? That could have actually been the match that maybe they decided to pull the trigger on the following WrestleMania for Seth's title run, because it was that great. And I would say it's a bit of a shame we haven't seen him for a while. I know the last time we saw him was that, as Oliver touched on it, the feud with AJ Styles, which was great. And that also does remind me, I was listening to a podcast the other day about obviously adapting to the new sort of culture of wrestling that came in sort of towards the end of 2014, start 20, mainly 2015, I think, in that sort of new culture of wrestling came, like obviously with your NXTs and what have you. Cena deserves a lot of credit for adapting to it. And another superstar I really hope isn't on this list, Randy Orton, hasn't really adapted to that. It's still
definitely not.
It's very sluggish still, but Cena really has adapted to the new sort of cultural wrestling. And And you've seen him, obviously, as we've mentioned with the feuds of sort of Styles, Owens, that he's well and truly adapted and put on some absolute clinics.
Definitely. Yeah, and like you said, from the respect aspect, in 2006 in the Hammerstein, look at the veracity in which he was hated. If you look at, obviously, Money in the Bank 2011, he was booed out of the building. And then you look at how things are now, people are kind of clamouring for a return because of what he's done with AJ and Kevin Owens. And basically anyone lately, he's been, really good at helping the next kind of caliber wrestlers get to the next level.
If I could do a film recommendation for John Cena, I would recommend Blockers. He's hilarious. It's a comedy about a group of girls who make a sex pact to have sex after the prom. But him and a couple of fans find out about it. It's so funny. And just hearing John Cena swearing is hilarious. And he has a beer bong up his bum. And it's so funny. So I'd recommend that film. If anybody wants to just see one John Cena film this year.
Okay, I was actually going to ask you about for a film recommendation. The weekend ahead, obviously not doing much over the weekend. So
if it's on Now TV, if you've got Now TV, so me and my girlfriend watched it the other day.
On Sky tomorrow.
I'm not sure. I don't have Sky. We watched it on Now TV the other day, but
Now TV is owned by Sky, so it must be on Sky Cinema, I imagine.
Yeah, but yeah, it's hilarious. I thought, yeah, if you like like American Pie type humor. In the late 90s, it's perfect for you.
I'm more than sold now.
All right, so our number four is Kenny Omega. So another New Japan, AEW, non-WWE guy. So Kenny Omega wasn't really thought of as a top guy probably until 2016 when he kicked AJ Styles out the Bullet Club and assumed the leadership of the group. And then clearly was taken more seriously. And from that point on, his career skyrocketed, winning the IWPG Intercontinental Championship, the Never Open Weight, six-man tag team championships with the Young Bucks, becoming the first non-Japanese winner of the G1 Climax, and earning universal praise for a series of matches with Okada. He finally won the I can't just be the New Japan Championship. I can't just be New Japan World Heavyweight Championship. He finally won the IWGP Heavyweight Championship from Okada in June of 2018. He lost it 6 months later. But year by year, Omega has continued to prove why he's the best of the world. Probably the best performer of his generation. A star that can draw all over the world and now in AEW, Omega is one of the biggest names on the roster and is heavily relied on by the company for it to grow. And yeah, he had a bit of a rocky start of AEW, but they think they were trying to make new stars, but now he's back on track, I think.
For this, obviously, Kenny Omega being the best bout machine. The series with Okada is, still revered to this day and will be for a long time to come. Best match in that series is the aforementioned 2 out of 3 falls, where he finally wins the IWGP title at Dominion in 2018. Needed to have that Kota Ibushi, Kenny Omega match at Wrestle Kingdom. That didn't happen. So when people talk about booking decisions and stuff, that was pretty horrific by New Japan. And then obviously Ibushi signed a contract and been treated like he was this past weekend. So that was worthwhile. In terms of AEW, I guess it's a storyline, but he hasn't really been treated that well with AEW. He's perceived as being, obviously he's a fantastic wrestler, but you've got to kind of be booked as such, and he hasn't really. So, a lot of scope to kind of, he seems to have gone down in value since leaving New Japan. So hopefully he and AEW can turn it around in 2020, because this is, the best wrestler in the world for a number of years, and he's kind of fallen by the wayside a little bit. So hopefully in 2020 he can get back on top where he belongs.
I think with Kenny, obviously, I think you've kind of hit the nail on the head there, Chris, about him getting onto the scene mainly in 2016. But what we touched on earlier, his matches in New Japan Pro Wrestling have been absolutely incredible, almost changed the game, really. They've made Wrestle Kingdom, obviously, probably the biggest show outside of WrestleMania, I'd say, to a lot of wrestling fans, largely because of their matches every year. January, it's obviously a must-see event. Also as well, he's one of the biggest names, obviously, on the wrestling industry. He's been absolutely massive with AEW. I think been a major part of AEW's instant success. Loved his match with John Moxley. And that, again, we talk about getting fans back. I mean, the amount of tweets I saw the next day from people I didn't really know liked wrestling saying, well, this AEW stuff looks good. Looks like back in the day sort of thing. Was just absolutely great. And it's what we want to hear. I know there's obviously it got a lot of criticism from people who sort of say, well, it's a bit backwards. It's a bit too violent. I'm not a big fan of this sort of stuff. I completely disagree. It's my favourite type of wrestling, whether that makes me a bit too mental. I sort of like that type of wrestling. But I thought it's great. I'm not saying I want a whole card full of it, but getting a match like that once in a while can't do any harm, especially to kill a heated feud. I think it's perfect storyline telling. I thought it, two men were fantastic. And but as I say, I think what Kenny will mainly be remembered for this year, for the decade of why it's so high, is just his absolute incredible matches in New Japan Pro Wrestling. And every year, obviously, we have when it comes to around this sort of time, funny enough, when it's like, oh, I wonder who could be the Shock Rumble appearances for the last sort of since 2017 at least, for the last few years, even 2016, it's always been, well, hopefully Kenny Omega, please be Kenny Omega sort of thing.
Yeah.
I think it was since Styles sort of started that trend.
Yeah, definitely.
Of indie guys that can shock the world by turning up. So, but no, fully deserved entry again.
It was like from 2017 onwards, and obviously before AEW started, Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks actually spoke to WWE, didn't they? Spoke to Triple H, so that kind of ramped up rumours, I think.
All right, so number three is Chris Jericho. So, Nick, he's top of your top 10 list. So, do you want to take the lead on this one?
Break the walls down! where to start now? Chris Jericho, my number one. Loads of reasons. Well, I'll quickly start with his accolades for this decade. As I say, we started on 2010. With the feud with Edge. He was obviously he did actually win the world championship at Elimination Chamber 2010 when Shawn Michaels obviously interfered by costing the Undertaker. Jericho did escape with the title, which meant perfect feud between him and Edge for the title. He then did carry the title. I believe he dropped it on SmackDown post WrestleMania to Jack Swagger at the time, who won the Money in the Bank briefcase. Then was largely seen on Raw. Did get involved in the Nexus feud, but as well with that as well, I thought his work on NXT that year was great, with the especially with the rivalry. Well, with some of the matches, the match with Bryan, the infamous match with Daniel Bryan, I thought was excellent on one of the earlier NXT sort of shows that year, 2010. I did like his whole cockiness. I know this is more sort of 2008 onwards. I know it's sort of brought into the decade of him when he was doing his "I'm the best in the world at what I do" sort of thing. Absolutely great. Then did have a bit of time off, and then those segments 2012. Obviously, it'll be the end of the world as you know it. Then he returned, thinking this is just Jericho. In his element, returning, thinking he's a face, and then coming, look like he's going to cut a promo, high-fiving everyone in sight, screaming, yeah, at the camera, walking backstage. Jericho trolling, this is one of the best sights. And obviously, again, great feud of CM Punk on his return. Obviously, I love the Jericho personal about turning to alcohol, obviously his alcohol addiction. That feud was fantastic. Then had his feud with Dolph before leaving, and then returned in 2013, the Royal Rumble, one of my fantastic, sort of really surprised returns, where I didn't expect to see it. And
just his whole behaviour in that match was great. I loved the...
Is that when he got the "you still got it" thing? Yeah. I never lost it, idiot.
I never lost it, baby. I love his... I don't know if it was 2010, I think it was 2009 when he... I love his shout back at the audience when he goes, "I'm from Winnipeg, you idiot." Or is it someone goes to go back to Toronto and he goes, "I'm from Winnipeg, you idiot." And then 2013, he was around for a fair bit, as I don't think he obviously was more putting over younger talent. Like he tried to put over Fandango. And then moving into 2014. I know he returned at the start of that year, I believe. I think it was 2014. But I think for those few years, I think what the best thing about Jericho was, I think when he returned, I loved the feud with Bray Wyatt as well when he jumped off the cage. That was fantastic. When the Wyatt family, just randomly appeared at Jericho, sort of just facial expressions like, "Holy crap, who are this lot?" sort of thing. He always gets those sort of little sort of snippets that you need to get in a feud. I think he's always been great at. But with Jericho as well, I think there's a trend coming. He's always stayed relevant throughout the decade. He's always find new ways to improve himself. He's never stood still. And the bloke's 48 now, I think he is. And he's still one of the best talking points in wrestling. Again, but we've touched on it as well. 2016, he's actually managed to capture a title as well, capturing the United States title. I believe that might have been 2016, 2017. I thought the whole thing with Owens was just absolutely pure entertainment, with scarves. And I remember I went to the O2 Arena actually for the Raw 2016. And he got the biggest pop of the night. It was just great. And straight away, everyone's chanting Y2J. Straight away, he just goes, "Shut up." We were just saying, me and my mates once, when he managed to make it a catchphrase. I think if someone can do that, then they've obviously got a bit about them, haven't they?
Definitely.
The list of Jericho, "Drink it in, man." Was fantastic. And yeah, the list gimmick was just absolutely hilarious. One of my favourite sort of gimmicks, I think, in this decade was just putting everyone on the list. I think it actually got me to a point when I was drunk at a wedding and I started creating my own list that night. And I think if you've got grown men doing stuff, whether it's just me and my mental age, I think you're obviously doing something right. And then again, it's a lot sort of coming to the end of his WWE run. Was still obviously just superb with Kevin Owens feud, and again with AJ Styles as well. That rivalry was brilliant. Loved the trolling when he made them a tag team, and then quickly turned on him. Massively helped AJ Styles and put him over, didn't he? I know he did win the match at WrestleMania, but sometimes I don't think it's all about the victory. I think it's all about when you've got someone new to the promotion. If you can get them, obviously the matches, if you can get them elevated, wrestling a big name like Chris Jericho. Then I believe the next night after Raw, AJ was named number one contender. So he clearly didn't do Styles any harm, did he, by winning the eventual match at WrestleMania. And then AEW, and then even in New Japan, he's just adapted again. He's made himself, and he's one of the best. He's still probably the biggest talking point in wrestling to date. And then it has to be said, a little bit of the bubbly. It must be the biggest meme of the year, maybe even the decade. The amount of people, even you just when I'm in, when someone's in the pub, I just hear random strangers sort of just going, "Oh, a little bit of the bubbly."
I went to Bongo Bingo's for our Christmas night out, and the compere kept doing all wrestling things like that, and he kept saying a little bit of the bubbly all the time. I was like, "You're definitely a wrestling fan."
I love it. And the thing is, though, like that, like everyone just gets the meme. You don't necessarily have to be a wrestling fan, but everyone loves it. Everyone finds it hilarious. Even, I think, Neil tweeted, they're like saying, "Oh, how do we get to celebrate our 3 points tonight?" "Oh, I know, a little bit of the bubbly." This is fantastic. And again, these matches this year have been, they've been great. The matches of Kenny Omega at Double or Nothing, absolutely loved. His match with Cody, really enjoyable, but the feud as a whole, really enjoyable. With just his little, again, just his little just snippets, his little promos are just fantastic. When MJF, when he came out and goes, "Oh, look at this guy, who wears a scarf?" But absolutely love Jericho this decade. Sorry, I've waffled on a bit, but just in short, I think the biggest trend here is just, as I say, a man who can continue to develop his character into his age of 48, a man who can still stay relevant, still put on absolute beautiful matches, but above all, still be one of the biggest talking points and the most enjoyable parts of wrestling going into 2020, I think, just deserves an almighty amount of credit. And throughout the decade, he's been just superb. So, yeah, Gutty hasn't won the whole thing, but 100% my number one.
He was pretty high on all our lists, apart from the person who didn't pick him, but I can't remember who it was.
Someone's not making my Christmas card.
Just touching on a couple of things that Nick didn't talk about. His feud against Dean Ambrose in 2016.
Yeah, Ambrose Asylum matches.
Yeah, so I enjoyed them. So, yeah. And obviously you'll see some of that in 2020 if John Moxley goes up against Jericho. And for me, like, I've been a fan since 1991, and he's been the most consistent wrestler, which does actually make him the GOAT, the greatest of all time. Above everyone else, he's had the most consistent career. So, that's why I can understand why Chris Jericho was Nick's number one and our number three.
All right, so our number two is AJ Styles, who was top of my list.
They don't want none. They don't really want none.
Do you know, that song was meant to be for James Storm, but then James Storm signed back with Impact.
Interesting fact.
Pretty much everywhere he's been over the last 10 years, he's ascended to the top and has been super over. So he started 2010 as a TNA World Heavyweight Champion. He aligned himself with Ric Flair and led the new version of the New Horsemen called Fortune. Styles won the world title a second time before leaving after he a failed contract negotiation. The phenomenal one then moved on to prove himself in New Japan, where he led the Bullet Club, and he won the IWGP Heavyweight Championship twice before his WWE debut, entering the Royal Rumble. Still one of the top five moments of WWE in 2016. So I watched that Rumble yesterday or the day before. It's dead good. So, from that moment on, he appeared at the Rumble. And Styles has felt like such a big deal. He won the WWE Championship within 8 months of debuting. He had memorable feuds with Cena, Nakamura, Samoa Joe. And he's even had time to reunite Bullet Club Light with the club on the Night Raw. So due to how entertaining he's been and his numerous title reigns, it's hard to leave him off this list, really. And arguably, I think he should have been number one. But...
yeah, there's no way he'd be outside the top 10.
No.
AJ Styles, since he debuted way back in the beginning of the 2000s, he's had a fantastic career. Mm. In terms of TNA, they put him in a storyline where he's like cheating on his wife or something, and that's kind of the reason why he left TNA in 2010. Obviously,
they just never wanted to put him in. It's like he was their champion, but he was never their like top guy. They always were looking for the next WWE guy they could pick and bring in.
Well, and just I would disagree with that, because obviously he was the Triple Crown champion of the company. Time gone over, but. Yeah, he went to New Japan and was fantastic in New Japan. Also had a great run with Revolution Pro Wrestling here in the UK as well. Mm-hmm. And then signed with WWE in 2016. The Royal Rumble is a fantastic debut. He got 30 minutes in the Rumble itself, which elevated him. And obviously, as Nick said in the Jericho piece about Jericho and AJ tagging up, having a t-shirt made and then breaking up as a team, which is probably the ultimate Jericho trolling. They had that feud, and it doesn't matter how the WrestleMania match went, because it didn't hurt AJ at all. And then he was the face of SmackDown Live, obviously a feud with John Cena, feuds with Dean Ambrose and stuff. It was my match of the year, the TLC match between the two in December 2016. Matches with Nakamura, matches with Samoa Joe. The match quality has always been great. His matches with Jinder Mahal was underrated because of probably who's in the match. you know, his match against Daniel Bryan as well when he lost the title again. So, yeah, match quality's always been up there. And now he's kind of focusing on the, you know, the group aspect of the, you know, the club. So, yeah, that's kind of where he's at, really. He's one of the most consistent performers and has been all his career, and it's definitely worthy of the number two slot on this top 10 of the decade.
Yeah, absolutely agree with a lot of that. I think, yeah, he's, again, I didn't really, when his debut at the Royal Rumble 2016, the pop around the world, I suppose, should be said. I mean, Twitter was incredible. I was actually watching Royal Rumble 2016, I actually watched with some mates, and we went absolutely ballistic when he came out. I know it was kind of rumoured, but I certainly didn't expect just a debut like that at the Rumble. I thought they would have certainly done it for NXT potentially, or even just done it almost a bit casually, if that makes sense. I didn't expect it to be just bang to the point, which was absolutely brilliant. As you say, he's got a good show, and it wasn't like he just came in, lasted 5 minutes, then got thrown out by a random superstar. At least he actually lasted half an hour and then got thrown out by KO, obviously a big name. And then, yeah, so he went straight into a feud with Jericho, which I think really did help his arrival in WWE, really did get him over. I know he didn't win the actual match at Mania itself, but it really helped him on to obviously break into a main event sort of player from the off. His feud with Reigns, I thought it's both his matches against Reigns were really underrated. If there's people ever trying to find just a random match to watch on the network, I really would recommend both his matches with Reigns, especially the Extreme Rules match. I thought was great, really good match. But yeah, and then as I say, to this day, I think the big word is consistent with AJ Styles. Always been really consistent in the ring, and certainly one of the top guys in WWE top bracket. And even now, I'm actually quietly enjoying his feud with Orton. Did like the bit on Raw last week where he was like, oh, "I'm not going to touch you, not going to touch you." I thought it was great. And as I say, he made a bit like what I said about KO. Really, he's made any feud he's been in has been very interesting. He's made Anderson and Gallows relevant again. He's obviously making them, and rightfully so. Really hope the club can sort of dominate, though. They've still got hopefully a vision of them all holding up gold at an end of the pay per view at some stage, which again I'm sure we will see in 2020. But rightfully so high up AJ Styles, because as I say, I think he's been, since the arrival of WWE, every year he's been pretty much my superstar of the year.
Alright, and drum roll. Our number one is Daniel Bryan, who was top of Oliver's list.
Yes, so. Yes, 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 yes.
Sound like an orgasm. Yes. All right, Oliver, do you want to take the lead on this one, as he was top of your list?
Yep, can do. Bryan signed from ROH in 2009. He went to Florida Championship Wrestling, had a fantastic match against Caval, who's also known as Low Key. And then from there, he was one of the NXT students kind of thing, and he's... mentor was The Miz, which was laughable, and you see CM Punk and William Regal laughing about it on the panel. He debuted against Chris Jericho in the main event of the first NXT show, not the NXT brand, but before that. He won the US title from The Miz in 2010 as well. Just going back a little bit, he was fired during the Nexus angle where he choked Justin Roberts, and then he came back as part of the squad against Nexus at SummerSlam 2010. At the Night of Champions in 2010, he won the US title from The Miz. Had a really long reign with the US title before losing it to Sheamus. In 2011, he won one of the Money in the Banks, the SmackDown one, I believe. He went on to win the world title at TLC 2011, which was like a picture book thing with Punk. Brian and Zack Ryder holding three of the most important titles in the company. He went on to lose to Sheamus in the most important match of his career at WrestleMania. And the way he lost it got a lot of fan support from there because he turned on AJ and she AJ Lee and she became the general manager. He was forced into a tag team with Kane and that became Team Hell No. They went on to win the World Tag Team titles.
But I like the week where they'll Team Friendship rather than Team Hell No.
And it really showed, obviously, Brian's personality more. And then from there going into 2013, he won the title from John Cena at SummerSlam before losing it because of Triple H and Randy Orton cashing in on the same show. He had a really difficult 2013 into 2014. He was part of the Wyatt family because he and CM Punk couldn't kind of get away from him. Punk got away from him by leaving the company. Brian, decided to become part of the Wyatt family. He turned on them in a really amazing moment inside a steel cage and had a fantastic match against Bray Wyatt at the Royal Rumble 2014, which we're kind of hoping for again 6 years down the line. When he takes on The Fiend at Royal Rumble 2020. Unfortunately, he suffered a lot of... from there, the Yes Movement came to be because Brian was kind of being screwed out of an opportunity, a clear opportunity at the WWE World title. He had to go on and face Triple H, Randy Orton and Batista on the same night. Beat Triple H and then won a triple threat match to become the WWE World Champion in probably his finest moment in the company. Unfortunately, from here, he suffered a number of different injuries. He won the IC title at WrestleMania, only to retire in 2016 because of concussions over the period of time. He then went on to be the SmackDown Live general manager, most notably feuding again with The Miz as part of Talking Smack in one of the best shows of that broadcast. He returned in 2018 and once again went one-on-one with The Miz in his return match. He won the WWE World title in the aforementioned match against AJ Styles and became the new Daniel Bryan. And then earlier last year in his most notable title accomplishments, him and Rowan became the SmackDown Live Tag Team Champions. And then from there, he's kind of just been a part of the show as opposed to being the show up until current day when obviously he's getting ready to take on The Fiend at Royal Rumble 2020. But yeah, as you can see from all the accomplishments of the last 10 years, and those are the main ones, that's why Daniel Bryan's my number one in the top 10 of the decade.
And he still has to make that announcement he was meant to make after he lost the title. He still hasn't made it yet. I've got a big announcement to make. And he hasn't made it yet. But yes, so Nick, have you got anything to say about Daniel Bryan before we go?
What have I got to say about Daniel Bryan? I'll give it short though. I think Oliver's covered a lot of it there and in fantastic detail. I think, a couple of under little things. I think with the WrestleMania 28, whilst that was, it should have been the worst night of his life, it actually turned into the best and career defining. WrestleMania 28, in my opinion, was the best ever after Raw crowd. The Yes chant that night was absolutely hilarious, was absolutely fantastic. It even aided The Rock in a Rock segment. I know The Rock can work any crowd. The Rock was blown away by it as well, I think. It created the Yes Movement. I thought the Team Hell No was my favourite ever strange bedfellow tag team. I thought they were fantastic together. The Dr. Shelby segments were brilliant. There are even clips I go and watch on YouTube as well just to cheer me up if I'm ever seen that.
That's it. That's it. The scene in the cafe where they reenacted the when Harry met Sally. That was hilarious.
Well, that was great. I believe it just the one where Harold's there as well. Don't touch me, Harold. and he goes, yeah, I thought they were just brilliant with Dr. Sherwin. And when I even loved the feud with the Team Rhodes Scholars, I thought was great as well. But and then, yeah, as you say, then obviously had that match with John Cena at SummerSlam, which I don't think gets enough credit. I think the feud itself, I think the feud with obviously the Authority kind of takes the stage, but I think the actual match with Cena was brilliant. And the fact that Daniel Bryan won clean as well, which goes a little bit unnoticed, because I thought that match was great. And yeah, as you say, the rest is kind of, as they say, history. For non-WrestleMania 30 was one of the best and one of the best, happiest WrestleManias for a long, long time. But away from the ring as well, his work with Connor, the cure, for, obviously Connor's cure, away from his profession, away from anything, is just general sort of attitude towards that. His general love and care towards that is just absolutely fantastic. And I think so we may love him for as a wrestler, but as a person as well, deserves an enormous amount of credit for that. Fantastic cause. And I think his whole sort of manner, I think he's just a fantastic, likeable bloke. And a bloody good wrestler as well.
Yeah,
definitely. You are listening to Jack Sinclair, and you should check out bbgwrestling.com.
All right, so that was our top 10. So if you agree, let us know if you agree or if you think we've missed anybody off. Contact us on Twitter, it's at bbgwpod, or leave us a comment below this episode. We have plenty of interviews coming up in the next couple of weeks. And if you really enjoy our show, again, give us a follow on Twitter, at bbgwpod. Check out our website where you can see our top five interviews of 2019, and you can also see our top five episodes of 2019. And is there anything else, lads, before we go?
No, here's to 2020. Yeah. Only 3 weeks till my favourite pay-per-view of the year.
Oh, I can't wait.
I'm staying up that night. I think I'm off on the Monday. I'm in Scotland that weekend, so it depends how much haggis I eat over the weekend if it doesn't kill me. So, yeah.
I usually take the day off, and it's the one I stay up and watch. The only really live wrestler I ever watch is Royal Rumble.
Yeah,
right then. Good night. Have a great 2020.
Good night. Good night, everyone.